But first, Cassandra Peterson, or as she's more famously known, Elvira, the Queen of Halloween, and the self-proclaimed horror hostess with the mostest. And who am I to argue? Cassandra has spent the last 40 years playing the charismatic character and has become a pop culture icon along the way. She hosted the popular syndicated TV series Movie Macabre. She also co-wrote and starred in two feature films, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, and Elvira's Haunted Hills. But there's so much more to Cassandra's story than her alter ego. She's released a memoir called Yours Cruelly, Elvira, Memoirs of the Mistress of the Dark. It's a funny, touching, and ultimately revealing look at how a little girl from Manhattan, Kansas, became a horror icon. As she says, the drama began only a year and a half into her life.
My mother was dyeing Easter eggs, and she was outside, and we had a bunch of eggs boiling in a big cast iron kettle on the stove. And at the age of 18 months, I don't know, I was very smart, I guess. I pulled a chair over, climbed up to look in the whatever was bubbling around there on the stove, and must have lost my footing because I grabbed the pot and pulled it over on me.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So it was a pretty bad burn. 35% of my body was covered in third-degree burns. Back in those days, 25% of your body burned third-degree was considered not survivable. So it was really was kind of a miracle that I lived through that.
Yeah. Lucky for you and lucky for us.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. You say that after the accident, you felt like a misfit with your burns and scars, but that led to your love of horror. How did that happen?
Well, kids made fun of me and teased me and bullied me about my scars. And I became very shy and withdrawn. At one point, sometime between second and third grade, my cousin Danny took me to see my first horror movie, House on Haunted Hill. And it just changed my life. I don't know. I somehow related to something in the movie. It just struck me that way. I don't know. I've talked to other people, fans and everything, who have scars or disabilities and things. And I guess they kind of see a fellow creature in horror movies that they feel like it's them, you know, the person that everybody in the movie is running from and screaming, you know, about.
Yeah. You left home at 14, and within 3 years, you were performing at the Dunes Hotel in Las Vegas as the youngest showgirl in town. You met celebrities like Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., and Tom Jones, but it was really your encounter with the king of rock and roll, Elvis Presley, that marked a turning point in your life. Can you tell us about this?
Elvis had a big, big impact on my life, I'll tell you. He came and saw my show in Las Vegas, which I could hardly believe that Elvis Presley was seeing me perform. And afterwards, we were lucky enough to be able to go to a party at his suite. And when I met him, we began talking, and we talked for the entire night. I mean, until the sun came up the next day. And later, he told me that he thought I should get the hell out of Vegas because I was too young to be there. And it was no place for a young girl. And it was kind of depressing because I thought I had finally achieved my dream of a lifetime. And that's where I would be until I became the oldest showgirl in Vegas, which would be now. And that would be really old. But he actually played the piano and we sang together. And he said, "You have a decent voice. Why don't you take singing lessons and maybe get in a band or learn to be a singer?" And him being Elvis Presley, I took his advice. And I went out the next day and got singing lessons. And before long, I was singing in my show and ended up leaving the show, going to Europe, getting in a band where I toured for about a year and a half in Italy in a pop band. Definitely changed my life, changed the direction of my life, meeting Elvis.
Yeah. And while you were in Italy, you also appeared in a Fellini film. And eventually, though, you returned to Los Angeles. And that led to 4.5 years working with the legendary improvisational and sketch comedy troupe, The Groundlings. You worked with my fellow Canadian, the late, great Phil Hartman, and Paul Rubens, who's better known as Pee-wee Herman. What did you learn about improv and comedy acting from your time with The Groundlings?
Well, it was absolutely invaluable. I mean, I'd been toying around with comedy acting for several years before that, but hadn't really gotten an opportunity to study it and think about it and learn more about it. So the Groundlings was absolutely the best place I could have found myself. I am terrible at remembering lines. That were just absolutely awful at memorizing. So I thought, oh, this is fantastic. You just make it up as you go along. And people like Phil Hartman, who was one of my dear, dear, dearest friends, and Paul Rubens, and John Paragon, who was my writing partner, who is probably best known for playing Jambi the Genie on Pee-wee's Playhouse. Those three were the stars of the Groundlings. Everybody else was good, but they really stood out. And being able to see them and see how effortlessly they did comedy on stage and was really, really helpful to me. But I think the best thing about the Groundlings and about comedy improv in general is it is amazing confidence booster for anybody, even if you don't want to set out to be a comedian. I think it's fantastic if you're in any career, say you have to do public speaking or you have to be in front of an audience. There is nothing like learning how to do comedy improv to build your confidence and get you through those situations.
Excellent. Very good advice. In August of 1981, the local Los Angeles TV station KHJ asked Miley Nurmi to revive her Vampira horror hostess, Vampira, but she was in her 60s at that time and wasn't up to doing it. So you auditioned to play Vampira's daughter. How did the audition go?
Well, it was really bizarre through a weird bunch of circumstances. I was on my honeymoon when I heard about the interview and didn't get back for a week or two later. They were still looking for someone to replace Sinister Seymour, who had been the horror host in LA at this particular station for a few years. So I got called. I went in on the interview. And when I walked into the dressing room, the entire room was packed with women who were wearing black dresses, black leotards, black hair, fangs, you name it. And I was in my summery little turquoise dress and with my red hair. And it was like, yeah, somebody invited you to a costume party and, didn't tell you were supposed to wear a costume. So I think I was able to get the part because of my improv background, because the director really did want somebody. He wanted a woman who was sexy, but also funny. And that wasn't that in demand back in those days. So I think that the comedy improv, lessons paid off in a big way for that interview. And obviously I got it because here I am 40 years later, still doing it.
You and your friend Robert Redding developed the look of the Elvira character. Can you tell us about that, about how you and Robert developed it?
Yeah, when I got the part, it was obvious I had to come up with a look that was spooky, and he and I threw around ideas about what I should look like because I had to be spooky. So our first choice was to go against the typical Morticia Adams kind of vibe and go with something that was more along the line of Sharon Tate in the Fearless Vampire Killers. Sort of a gauzy, diaphanous gown that was shredded and kind of long red hair, which I would be able to use my own hair, which was a great idea, I thought, at that time. And then more pale makeup, pale lips with the more dead girl eyes, kind of, dark eyes. And when we took the sketch into the management at the station, they were like, no, oh my God, no, you have to be all in black with black hair. So it was like back to the drawing board. So we took the basic black Vampirella, Vampira, Morticia Adams look and tried to make it a little more 80s. We had a little leather and studs. And the hair Robert got from his very favorite singer of all time, Ronnie Spector from the Ronettes, who called her hairdo a knowledge bump. So we did that hairdo. And then Robert got the makeup from a book of Kabuki makeup. And we put it all together, took in another sketch to them. They loved it. We were afraid of the cleavage, that it was going to be too low for them, but their only comment about that was, can you make the slit on the leg a little higher? So,
Interesting.
They were in
yeah.
for it for the ratings. Yeah,
yeah,
right? As
exactly.
long as it made money for the station, they were good.
Yeah. How did the character of Elvira evolve from TV to when you made your first feature film, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark?
It did evolve. I see old footage. I see my hairdo growing higher and higher. It started out kind of flat. And then every few months or every year, I see that my hair gets higher and higher. It got to a point once where I looked like a cone head or something. It was just like, this is insane. It got so high. And then we had to sort of bring it down a little bit. And then it, you know, we found a happy medium. But I was just trying out different character things, throwing whatever I could against the wall, seeing what would stick. I see old footage of the character now and just like cringe. Oh my God.
Hello, darling. Yes, sirree, it's little old me. That gal with a walk that makes the boys gawk. Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. And welcome back to Movie Mac, a Southland tradition here in the Southland. And this time around, we're serving up a classic tale of gothic horror. Classic, that's C-L-A-S-I-C-K. Of course, I'm talking about Frankenstein. Robert Foxworth.
So, yeah, so bad. But by the time I did the movie, I think the movie was a really, really good, besides just being a movie, it was an exercise in finding out who the character really was. Because we had to write about her past. Where did she come from? Why does she look this way? Who is she? And I think all of those things really solidified the character for me.
Apparently Mrs. Talbot has a grandniece, Elvira, who was also one of the beneficiaries.
That's impossible. Who is this grandniece?
Hey guys, sorry I'm late, but then so's my aunt. Hey, what she died of? Nothing serious, I hope. Say, nice jacket. Who shot the couch? Hey, is there a bathroom around here? I'm telling you, that toilet over the cozy cot looks like somebody's science project.
Who is this woman?
This must be Mrs. Talbot's grandniece. Elvira.
Starting with Mistress of the Dark and going forward, it was a much more developed character. And I don't just mean the chest. I mean the actual character itself.
Yeah.
So it was very, very helpful in a lot of ways.
That's good to hear. You seem very proud of the fact that you became a pop culture icon later in life. You were 30, which you joke is over the hill for women in Hollywood. And since no one would rep you because of your age, you've always declined an agent. One could argue you've been subverting the patriarchy for your entire career. What does that mean to you?
Oh, yeah, that would be a nice way to look at it. I do feel like, although I have a wonderful team of people that help me, believe me, but yeah, I do feel like I kind of did it on my own in one way. I was able to get around having an agent and just doing things more the way I wanted to do them, how I saw them. And I think that part is very similar to the character of Elvira, because Elvira pretty much gets herself into messes all the time, but then she gets herself out. She doesn't need anybody's help, especially a man.
Mm-hmm.
She does it in a really stupid, ridiculous way, which is kind of how I do everything too. but she does it on her own, you know?
Yeah.
And if you do things on your own, then you get exactly what you want. You don't have anybody telling you, hey, change this, put this way, change your costume, change the way you talk. Yeah. You are totally in charge. And that's pretty much the way I've been. Ever since I started this character, kind of, it's me sort of calling the shots.
And look how far it's taken you and how long you've lasted and continue to last. So that's great. In your memoir, you reveal that you've been in a 19-year relationship with a woman named Teresa Weerson, or T. Why did you want to use this space to share your relationship with T?
Well, I wanted to talk about everything in my life. I really wanted to bring up things that I'd done in my past that I really hadn't told anyone. And I thought, if you're going to have a memoir, you know, spill the beans. That's what people want to hear. And, I just turned 70 years old. And it's like, okay, if I don't talk about this stuff now, when am I going to talk about it? But I've always kept my private life very private, because I feel I'm protecting a character. It's not me. If it was just me, the actress going out and doing roles on TV or in films, I'd tell people what my background was. But Elvira is a very well-known straight horn dog, and I didn't want to inflict my personal life on her. When I was married, I kept that quiet because I don't think people wanted to look at Elvira and think, oh, yeah, she's actually at home with her husband, you know, and changing diapers, you know, on her baby. I don't think people really wanted to know that. So the same thing with my relationship now. I just didn't want to have any reflection on the Elvira character.
That makes total sense. Were you surprised by all of the media coverage in response to the revelation?
I sort of was. I was like, wow, is it really that big a deal in this day and age? I don't get it. I mean, I guess when a celebrity comes out, people, it's interesting to people and they want to know, but me personally, I thought there were other things in the book that were more interesting, you know? I don't know. People glommed onto that, and then if that was the thing that got the book into the public eye, great, you know? T and I discussed it a lot first before I did that. I wouldn't have done it if she wouldn't have wanted me to. And she's a very, very private person, and I don't want to suddenly bring all this, you know, attention to her, but she thought it was a good thing so that we can go around and be together and not have to worry about people wondering what the heck's going on.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah. Cassandra Peterson, thank you very much for the great conversation. Congratulations on Yours Truly, Elvira. I'm looking forward to the sequel. Yours Truly, Cassandra.
Hey, that's a good idea. Thank you very much.
Cassandra Peterson is the author of Yours Cruelly, Elvira, Memoirs of the Mistress of the Dark. Find out more at wpr.org/beta.
You realize that there is actually a lot of American folk horror, and it doesn't look anything like British folk horror necessarily. People didn't call these films folk horror, but when you think about it, Children of the Corn is absolutely a folk horror film. You know, there's no denying that.
Coming up, Kayla Janisse joins us to talk about her bewitching documentary about the history of folk horror. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.